Welcome to Foxcast, a podcast for clinicians made by clinicians. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Find out more at foxrehab.org.
Welcome to Foxcast Physical Therapy. We are at CSM 2018 here in New Orleans, and we've got our next guest on the show, an assistant professor of clinical physical therapy at the University of Miami, where he was also a graduate. Hurricanes, the U. Right. He has held numerous leadership positions within the Academy of Geriatric Physical Therapy and is right now the Academy's president-elect, taking office later on tonight. Founder of the first geriatric PT residency in the U.S. and former director of rehabilitation for a large post-acute care provider, Dr. Greg Hartley. Dr. Greg Hartley, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Appreciate you coming out.
Yeah.
You're taking control of the section. That's a big deal.
It is.
How are you handling that role so far?
Well, I've only been in office for 12 hours.
I bet you it started before that.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. So there's a big learning curve, but I'm really looking forward to what I anticipate can be some really interesting and rewarding challenges that we face, but also some interesting ideas about how we can increase our membership and engage our members a little bit more. Particularly, I think with the membership issue, there's two big populations that I think we should target. One is those individuals who may be members of other sections that don't necessarily think that they work in geriatrics.
Right.
Although data from APTA's research department that I just got my hands on last week actually tells us that in 2017, physical therapist in private practice, as well as physical therapist in hospital-based outpatient centers, so that really the two big outpatient areas, 31% of their time is spent treating adults over the age of 65.
Yeah. I was with one of my colleagues at Fox Rehabilitation here, and we were at a PT school giving a presentation on geriatrics and working with older adults. And the responses were what you would assume in terms of, well, I don't know if I want to do that, and I want to work on outpatient ortho. And Heather just put it pretty succinctly. She said, you're going to be working in geriatrics. You're working with older adults, humans. You're working with older humans.
Exactly.
So you're going to need to have a wide skill set because you think you're going to do all high jumpers and you know bobsled athletes or just anything, but you're going to be dealing with human beings who need to move. We need to make sure you know how to treat those human beings who need to move.
Right. So in an outpatient environment, when one out of every three patients that you lay your hands on is over the age of 65, how can you say I don't treat geriatrics? So, you know, orthopedics or sports or whatever might be your primary interest, but certainly the Academy of Geriatrics should have something to offer you. You should stay informed about the aging adult. You should get the journal and know what the research says about mobility in people who are 77 years old, because that's going to be a part of your patient population. So hopefully we can engage people that perhaps are not members of the Academy now because they don't identify with the Academy of Geriatrics. I would like to sort of change that a little bit and help them identify with that aging adult population.
Where do you go? Do you go to in theory, if you wanted to start with orthopedics, do you go to the ortho section president, or do you, where do you think your section should start?
For example, yesterday we did a session on this very topic, the growing needs of aging adults. We did it for the ortho section. It was programming for them. So it was in a huge room. We had a near capacity room full of folks, and they were mostly orthopedic section members. So we got to sort of send the message of, here's the demographics of the aging population in the United States. This is the fastest growing population in the United States. I shared the data on one out of every three patients you treat is going to be over the age of 65. Yeah. So if you don't think you work in geriatrics, you might want to rethink
that. I got news for you. I got data for you.
So hopefully we got some people engaged yesterday in that session, and hopefully we'll continue that. So I think we can target larger sections and maybe get some crossover, not to take membership away from ortho, because that's certainly where they identify primarily, but also hopefully encourage them. So that's one group of people that I think we have potential to grow. The other is the early professional and the students.
Yeah.
So I think we really have to engage the early professionals. You know, geriatrics kind of has an image issue that I think we need to work on.
Sure.
Part of it is the same message, is these are the patients you're going to be treating. You need to engage in a section and an academy that's going to give you some resources to help you deal with that.
So. Yeah. The other thing I want to point out is specifically for students or new professionals, you can 100% be a part of two different sections of the APTA.
You can be a member of all of them.
You can be a member of all of them. Exactly. So by all means, you know, treat it as a part of like maybe continuing education.
Absolutely.
Jump into the section for a little while. Spin
I'm
around.
A member of four sections.
What sections are you in besides?
Education.
Yeah.
Health policy and administration and neurology.
So you're not pigeonholed by just going into one particular section. You're saying, hey, this is where my skill set lies, and I would like to improve in these areas.
Absolutely.
How do I do that? Get around some other people who are like-minded.
Right. I mean, I'm an educator,
sure.
So I would be remiss if I didn't be a member of the education section.
Yeah.
And my interests are in neurology as well as geriatrics, so of course I'm a member there. So plenty of opportunity for people to be members in multiple academies and sections, so I would encourage that. So that's a huge market for us, I think, to grow as an academy and hopefully expand our message. The early professional, another target population. I think we really have to increase our social media presence. That's one of my strategies as the incoming president is to try to engage the early professional, the student, in a much more interactive way and in a way that they will actually engage.
Yeah, I love that. So here's a crazy idea. Podcast.
Yeah, I know, right?
It just come to mind.
So that's kind of where I see us growing.
Well, you're just getting going. I'm excited for it.
A few hours in.
Going back to more a clinical topic, something you're passionate about, the provision of skilled care.
Yeah, so this is a chronic issue, I think, that we have had in certain settings. And part of it, I think, is based on inherent ageism. We talk about ageism in society. We talk about ageism in policy and discrimination issues related to age. But I think we have to self-reflect because I think physical therapists are ageist.
Are we guilty of that ourselves,
right? Absolutely, 100%. So we underdose our aging adult patients because we may look at that patient and say, he's too old to make improvement, or there's no potential,
sure,
or he's maxed out, or I got him back to prior level of function, so
good
I'm
enough.
Done. That's good enough, right? And we don't think about what chronic conditions that individual was living with before he ended up in your practice and how you might could not only deal with the primary issue that he was referred for, but also the underlying chronic issues and maybe get that person better than they were before they came to you. That's one of the issues, is that I think we tend to underdose strength training. I mean, how many times have we been in a facility, whether it be an outpatient clinic or a skilled nursing facility or a hospital, and we see a therapist or a physical therapist assistant put a 2-pound ankle weight on a patient, put them over a bolster and say, do this, you know, short arc quad, 3 sets of 10, and then come back a few minutes later and say, Mr. Jones, did you get those 3 sets of 10? Yeah, I'm fine. What you want me to do now? Move on to the next exercise that doesn't necessarily challenge the patient either. And then at the end of the day, we call that skilled therapy.
Yeah.
We call that strength training. That was the goal. And so I would challenge the physical therapists and PTAs out there that that's not skilled therapy. And in fact, it's likely malpractice to practice that
way. I want to repeat what you just said because we've got an audience of people online on the podcast and walking by. If you're not challenging your patient, that's tantamount to malpractice.
Absolutely. 100%. So if you're not using your degree and your license at the top of your license to dose exercise appropriately, if your goal is strength training, your resistance that you provide to your patient is less than 60%, then you're not strength training.
Sure.
So how you establish that target zone for strength training is super important. And I just don't see that happening in a lot of places, at least not routinely. And the same is true when you put them on a respirator for 5 minutes or 10 minutes and you come back and say,
skilled.
You know, that's skilled therapy when you never even check their heart rate or their response to the activity.
Listen, one rep max and how to you know, strengthen a muscle, that works no matter what age.
No matter what
your
age.
Your one rep max might be a little bit different.
Right.
But we still got to hit 60 to 80%.
Exactly. There's easy ways to do that, to estimate the amount of resistance that's necessary. So, there's a seminal paper on that from Dale Avers and Rosemary Black, I think. It's a white paper on strength training in aging adults. So I would encourage people to look out for that. It actually talks about these issues and goes through the steps of how to estimate one.
Yeah, when I saw you wanted to talk about that, I said, great, we talk about that a lot here at Fox Rehab. Tim Fox is, you sound a lot like Tim. He's got a little longer hair. than you right now. But
talks with a different kind of accent.
Little different accent. But yeah, that's what we want to hammer home is, you know, if you're calling it skilled and someone comes in and questions you, are you going to stand behind that?
Absolutely.
Are you willing to do that in front of an audience?
Right. And your documentation has to support that as well.
Sure.
I mean, that's where you're going to be gauged on whether or not you're going to be receive payment for your service. So that documentation has to reflect the skill. The skill needs to demonstrate the decision making that went into why you chose that much weight, or why you chose that many reps, or why they did that aerobic activity for X number of minutes. Whatever it is, it doesn't really matter. The balance change, whatever.
It goes back to, you know, math in sixth grade. I was terrible at math, especially in sixth grade. But it was like, give me the answer and explain how you did it. And I was like, I don't know if I can explain it, but can you stand behind this? Can you explain why you did that? Is someone going to question you?
Right.
And if so, are you sound in that?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the documentation of just writing down an exercise and how many reps and how many sets somebody did, that doesn't reflect skill. The clinical decision making that went behind why you chose that.
Love that.
That's the skill.
So you're in an interesting role, clinician, educator, and now leading a section.
Right.
So a little of the political angle. So you're very passionate about advocating and policy. And so talk about that.
Very much. Something that just happened last week, right? We had elimination of the hard cap. After 21 years of fighting for that in physical therapy, we actually had a permanent repeal of the cap on Part B. Now, what it does is essentially make permanent the exceptions process. So we still have the KX and we still have the process of what we had before, but now we never have to fight this battle again after 21 years. That's a huge win. And who does it impact more than members of the Academy of Geriatric Physical Therapy? Because that's our patient population.
Right.
Our patient population is a Medicare population. And so if this doesn't impact you and you're treating older adults, then I'm not sure who else it would impact more than us. So I'm very passionate about advocacy. The next big thing for us, I don't know what that's going to be, but we will have the next big thing. We will have we need to deal with the payment parity for telehealth. We need to deal with payment parity for PT versus PTA because that was one of the pay-fors in the new legislation that came out. So we've got a lot of battles before us. The other big battle coming before us is going to be in post-acute care. So we've got big payment reform initiatives coming for skilled nursing. We've got huge payment reform issues coming for home health. So trying to deal with the political aspect of making sure that our patients get the care they need, and then obviously that we get the payment that we deserve.
Right.
Those are big, important issues that I think people don't understand the connection often between the importance of participating in a political action committee, giving, even if it's just a dollar, giving anything to the PAC so that we can have some influence on Capitol Hill, because like it or not, that is how things get done in this country. And it's interesting to note that, you know, only about 6% of the members of APTA actually give to the PAC. And if every member of the APTA gave $20, we would be the largest healthcare PAC in the country. How powerful would we be, and how much would we have? How much influence do we have on Capitol Hill?
One thing, now I've been doing podcasting and reporting and talking with people in this field for going on 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I just found out today that none of your dues as an APTA member can legally and do not
That's
go
right.
to the PAC. It
That's
has
right.
to be a donation by a member. I just found that out today. I just assumed part of my dues went to the Political Action Committee.
No, that's for legal reasons,
sure.
like you described. That can't happen.
Can't happen.
PAC donations are separate. We have people that can make large donations, but seriously, $1, $2, you know, skip a cup of coffee one day and give $3 to the PAC.
I heard a great, what is the Political Action Committee? How does it work? So if the APTA is a big old Harley, the Political Action Committee is the cool sidecar, you know, with the dog, with the tail wagon out the side. That's how we talk to Washington, D.C., where all the decisions are made. We got to be there.
Exactly.
You know, you brought up the cap repeal, but that just happened overnight, right?
right.
Of course not.
Yeah. 21 years
just happened overnight.
21 years, if that's overnight, then yeah, sure.
So you could stop all the work with the Political Action Committee right now. You would not notice today. You're not going to notice tomorrow. 6 months, a year from now, you're going to notice.
Right.
And to get that momentum again, not a chance.
I'm passionate about it because I care about our profession. I'm passionate about it because I care about patients. I'm passionate about it because I care about healthcare in the country.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the member of the Academy of Geriatric Physical Therapy, these Medicare issues in particular affect us sort of more than any other academy or section in the APTA. And so I would really encourage and challenge members of the AGPT to give. Just give something.
You know,
even if it's $1, $2, $10, $15, whatever you can afford. But also put a value on how important you think political action is. And if you think that that's an important cause, if you think that it was a win for PTAs to be able to participate in the TRICARE system,
sure.
If you think that those things are important to your practice, then make a donation.
This is how you show
it.
We have a tradition here on the show. It's called a fox tale. Comes at the end. Why did you choose to work with older adults, and why do you continue to work with older adults?
It sort of happened by accident. My grandma was involved in an accident, and you know, a lot of people have a similar story,
sure.
I know. And so I was exposed to physical therapy that way. Her accident was pretty significant, and I saw what tremendous change in her overall quality of life physical therapy made. It enabled her to stay home longer. It enabled her to live a higher quality of life, at least almost right up until the very end. So that got me interested into physical therapy. When I went to PT school, I wasn't sure what area I would go into. Was it going to be orthopedics? Was it going to be sports? Was it going to be Jerry? I had no idea. But once I graduated, I started working mostly, I was at the VA for a while, but I started working mostly with aging adults there. And I found that the changes that were happening in physical therapy were so, even when they were small changes, they were so meaningful that they were so, they enabled people to have huge changes in their overall quality of life. So it wasn't about getting one grade stronger in strength. It wasn't about gaining 10 degrees of range of motion. It was about, can I stay home rather than go to an institution?
And that's a big change.
It's huge. So I started realizing that those small changes had even when they were small, had huge life-changing sort of outcomes. And I just felt like that was the best way I could contribute to this individual's
life. I love that.
So,
I love that answer.
Yeah, that's why I keep doing it. The outcomes are so worth it.
I love that. So is it Dr. President Harley or President Dr. Harley?
I don't know, whatever
I'm not sure.
You want to call.
Congratulations on taking over the section.
All right.
Big things.
Thank
and
you.
I appreciate you taking some time out for Foxcast.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy.
Thanks for listening to Foxcast Physical Therapy, a clinically excellent podcast. It's brought to you by Fox Rehabilitation. Listen to other episodes or read articles and position papers at foxrehab.org.